You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Yes, it is. And I am Stevie Suckage right here on 670 The Score. We are Saturday Suckage. Welcome, fellow Suckateers.
You know, it was last week. You were supposed to remind me of this, Sean Sears. You're supposed to remind me of this. About how bitchin' I am, right? I spent a segment last week urging the Bears to trade for Max Crosby. I mean, they can't draft anybody that good to put that much of a fear in opposing offenses opposite Montez Sweat. And they have to do it before Caleb Williams' rookie contract is up. That's the window. That's when you have to win. So I said it last week. That's what they have to do. A lot of people, like The Athletic, wrote this week, Myles Garrett made the Bears make a trade. They just made up trades in The Athletic. The Bears trade for Myles Garrett despite his all these nagging foot injuries. Well, I don't want nagging foot injuries. We had nagging Yannick Ngakoue last year, and he didn't do it. He couldn't stay healthy, right? Max Crosby, two X's, double. It's right. Doesn't a guy named Max with two X's, Super Bowl XX, doesn't he have to be a Bear? The Athletic's making trades where Max Crosby goes to the Eagles. No. Ryan Poles gets him. So I said that last week. And of course, it just blew up because I said it. Social media, rumors, text. Max Crosby talked about it. And this speaks to the global reach of Saturday Suckage. So let's hear what Max Crosby had to say after Saturday Suckage simply blew up his world.
Just seeing all the craziness, like, it's been insane. You know what I mean? Like, I can't even open my phone. Every 2 seconds, it's Lions fans, Lions fans, Lions fans, Falcons fans, Bears fans. It's me in an edit in a different jersey, and I'm like, what the fuck is this turned into?
Yes, nice editing. Nice editing, Sean. We needed that edited. That's the deal. I don't know what you'd have to give up or when. I don't know how good these Bears are. I know that defense at secondary. And you know what you saw the last time the Bears finally, God, it's been forever since they played. It's forever, right? But you know what? Josh Blackwell, look what he's doing. All of these guys step in. Jalen Jones, right? They all make plays. This is a secondary that's not, it's not uh-oh time when someone gets hurt. It might be if Jalen Johnson got hurt. That would be scary. But even with Jaquan Brisker out, you're still seeing, again, crappy teams. Again, we don't know how good the Bears are, but from what we see, at least they're beating crappy teams, beating up on crappy teams. And this whole division is over 500. It hasn't happened in the NFL in this division alignment ever. Bears are 4-2, two games over 500, which would be time for an Eberflus parade. And they're in last place in the NFC North. But they hold the seventh seed in the playoffs as of now. Playoffs aren't starting now, but what the hell? Montez Sweat, going home this week, home meaning his first team, making the contradictory statements. It doesn't make sense. He said it this week. I got traded. Ultimately, he would say, I want to be somewhere where I'm wanted. He said he was offended, but he didn't take it personal. Well, of course you took it personal. You were offended. You just said so. I was offended, but I didn't take it personal. Trying to say this game's a business. He took it personal. Okay. This would be a good time for a Montez Sweat game. 2.5 sacks. Now, he's been called the multiplier. But we need more. We need to see more. It'd be nice to see him ruin a game. Start to finish. Ruin a game. And this would be a good one. But Max Crosby, remember, 2X's like Super Bowl XX. He's a perfect target. He should be a Bear. Max Dos Equis. He would multiply the multiplier.
You're already making partnerships for him, man.
I am. I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to get everybody paid. But I want both Bears fans to get paid off. I want us to get paid off. Content is king around here, and the Bears are the king content. And that deal, Ryan Poles make it.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right?
Of course it does, because I said it.
Obviously.
And it started a whole storm. Max Crosby going to the Bears. I heard on Saturday Suckage, and then his phone blew up. You just heard him say that. So we don't know if Jaden Daniels is going to play. Marcus Mariota has had king-size games against the Bears. He has pantsed the Bears on his own. He has been a greater enemy to the Bears than Jay Cutler ever was. He could be. Kevin Fishbane was on with Bernstein and Harris, and he said he made the point that Marcus Mariota is going for the Osweiler. 3 wins against the Bears with 3 different teams. Osweiler sucks more than Mariota. Mariota is probably a good quarterback. I don't know if you could. Would he be the best backup quarterback on a roster today? You know, Andy Dalton isn't, because the best backup quarterback is now Bryce Young. Oh, you know what? Can we get the Matt Bowen stuff? Because Dan Quinn is still whatever kind of games they're trying to play, and Jaden Daniels isn't playing them as well as Dan Quinn, head coach of the Commanders, is. But they wanted him to go along with the idea. Say, yeah, we want to make the Bears study twice, study for 2 quarterbacks, spend a lot of time. We want them to waste their time. So whatever the Bears are doing in defending the quarterbacks, and one of the advantages the Bears have is what the Commanders thought was their advantage, that being this, that if we lose our starter, we don't have to change the offense completely for the backup. They could do the same thing. Mariota's not going to be as elusive right now as Jaden Daniels, but it's the same idea. And that helps the Bears. You're studying the same concepts. You're studying the same looks. You're studying. You're dealing with a veteran, a quarterback who's more savvy, got more experience, but Daniels is more talented. So as the week in the middle of the week, you're thinking, well, maybe Daniels is, maybe he's tough enough. You shoot him up. Give him a flak jacket, put Kevlar on him, and he's going to play. And Matt Bowen, just, again, there's, you talk about the seed, the growth of Saturday Suckage. Who put Matt Bowen on the radio first?
Was it you?
Saturday Suckage.
Wow.
Mike Kellums, the best writer's editor I ever had at the Tribune, put him in the Tribune. And his column runs on a Saturday, and I go, oh, who is this guy? We need to talk to him. This is good stuff. And because he got out of Iowa, and Iowa producing the likes of Missy Isaacson, Brian Harlan, agent to the Stars, and his brother, who is a star, by the way. You're too young for this, Sean, but before Kevin Harlan became Kevin Harlan, while he was being Kevin Harlan, one of the greatest, and everybody lauds Ernie Johnson and Chuck and Kenny Smith, and that's true. That's deserving. It's a great show. Kevin Harlan broadcast games with Danny Ainge and John Thompson. It was the best broadcast team you'd ever heard. They're doing NBA games, and it's all Kevin Harlan can do to play. Like Ernie Johnson, like to play cop, to play traffic cop and ringleader, and sometimes parent. Okay, you go to this corner, you go to that corner. And That was it. And then, anyways, Matt Bowen comes out of Iowa, and he gets drafted one pick before Tom Brady.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
How do you not know that? God, the things that score producers don't know just amazes me.
Yeah.
There are score producers who don't know what's in Goodfellas, what's in Godfather 1, what's in Godfather 2, The Big Lebowski.
I've seen all those. I'm well versed in those.
You're the one.
I'm the one.
Because yeah. I've had a series of producers who don't know, I can't say it, but don't know stuff. Anyways, Saturday Suckage was the first to put Matt Bowen on the air, so we are the source of all his success. And he's on once a week with Bernstein Harris. And he was talking this week on the IFCOM. It's Jaden Daniels, if you play, and what makes a defensive coordinator wet his pants. And it's a guy like Jaden Daniels. Here's how the conversation went.
I'll say this. If it is Jaden Daniels, he's really fun to watch now. And I tell you what, you can go back to Daniels' tape at L.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Bless you. He's an excellent thrower from the pocket. You have to start there. You look at the concepts they ran at LSU. Those are pro-level concepts in terms of the type of route structure they had. And that carries over into the NFL. And look what Cliff Kingsbury has done. They really have meshed the pro style with the college spread offense together. You know, more RPOs, getting the ball out on time, a lot of quick game throws. And Daniels has been so efficient throwing the football. I mean, he really sees it well. He throws with accuracy and location. He can push the ball to the third level. And I'll tell you right now, when he is deployed as a runner, whether on design rushes or scramble attempts, he is absolutely electric. Electric in the open field. So that creates issues for you from a defense perspective. He's up and he's playing this week because now it changes what you want to do in terms of your game plan. What do you do on 3rd and 7 to 10? How are you going to keep him in the pocket? And also when he's in the pocket, he can work to multiple levels as a thrower. So an excellent football player has had a great start to the season.
So that's Matt Bowen talking about keep him in the pocket. No, if I were the Bears and it's Jaden Daniels and he has a rib injury and they've shot it up and wrapped it up and Kevlar'd it up and done all that stuff. Here's what I do. I make sure he doesn't stay in the pocket. I want him running. I want to see how much courage he really has. How tough is he? Is he making business decisions? Plus, I want a shot at those ribs. Face it. Every coach, every player knows every injury on every player on the other team, the other side of the ball they're going to face. With something as big as Jaden Daniels and a rib injury, oh, baby, yeah. How do we expose him to more? How do we get him out of the game? How do we disrupt their plan to start him? And then they bring in the backup and go from there. So, with all due respect, I understand what Matt Bowen's saying is the same way a lot of teams approach Justin Fields. Well, we're going to make him play quarterback. He can run like crazy. We're not going to let him do that. The Belichick idea of we're going to take away your best weapon. And now what? So, with Jaden Daniels is we're going to take away that elusiveness and we're going to make you stay in the pocket and throw.
That's going to be tough with a rib injury too, right?
It would be. You might be a little gun-shy still, but I would send a lot of Eberflus blitzes. I would want him out of that. I would want guys to take shots at him. I would want to see how likely, how willingly, how tough he is.
Yeah.
See? There you go. That's what I would do. But nobody asked me. I'm not the coach. I don't know how much longer Eberflus would be the coach if he loses tomorrow. You imagine? They go into Washington, they're facing a backup quarterback. He loses to the coach the Bears didn't sign. the quarterback they didn't take, the offensive coordinator. I don't know that the Bears didn't want him, because I think part of the story, and I don't know every detail, understand a investor in the Washington Commanders is Magic Johnson. And Magic Johnson certainly has L.A. ties, and he saw this Caleb Williams thing, and saw Cliff Kingsbury, and it's just, ooh, ooh. And I think Magic Johnson had a jet waiting in Chicago for Cliff Kingsbury to come to Washington. As soon as he got out of Hallis Hall, maybe it was a helicopter for all I know. But Magic Johnson played a part in that. Anyways, if the Bears were to lose and Marcus Mariota's offense looks better than Caleb Williams and Dan Quinn's team looks better than Matt Eberflus's, what does our post-game show sound like? Mully? Olin? Patrick Manley? What does that sound like? Is it a referendum on the coach and the offensive coordinator? Again, I'll hang up and listen for my answer. Going to take a break. When I come back, we have it's a wonderful interview. Mully and Haw had Nick Allegretti on. Local hero playing for the Commander. Still got time for his local station. Talks about the Bears, talks about the Commanders, talks about Jaden Daniels. It's a terrific interview. It's a lot of fun. So we'll play that for you. This is Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You suck.
No, I know.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
708 texter, 312-644-6767 is the number. 708 texter says, love the show, but man, you're making me cry. Why?
This is a bummer, man.
No, but it's, come on, this is a pretty groovy day we're having. All right, here's how groovy it is. Local hero Nick Allegretti. Local hero who just finds himself on all kinds of teams with all kinds of great players, all kinds of winning. And here he is on The Score, the winningest sports radio station in Chicago, except for this show where we're the suckiest. So Nick Allegretti, Washington Commanders lineman, was on with Mully and Haw this week. And here's how that went.
My brother from Chi-Town, Frankfort, Illinois, finest.
Okay. And Mahomes will keep it himself for the moment and then throw for a touchdown. And there is Allegretti, who comes in and lines up as an eligible receiver.
There we go. Lincoln Way East High School.
Holy cow.
Nick Allegretti. That's right.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Wow, you want to talk about the man of the hour. We have so much to talk to Nick Allegretti about. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Lincoln Way East has a huge game tonight, last game of the season, a big one. And I believe the Illini are crossing the continent
in order
to play a big game.
That's a big one.
Tomorrow. And, oh, by the way, I'm pretty sure that the Bears head to Washington to play a hometown guy with the hometown team. Nick, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Good morning.
Well, it's great to catch up with you. And I know you got a lot going on with all of your various schools and professional teams, et cetera. How you feeling physically, buddy? How you doing? You played the Super Bowl. It was incredible, your performance, what you went through, and how well you played.
And which one of your three Super Bowl rings is your favorite?
definitely the last one to answer that. And then, yeah, no, body's feeling pretty good. Getting into a rhythm, about it's week eight, you know, body starts to, you know, get used to the bumps and bruises, so we're doing good.
Well, we're not going to ask you about the White Sox and Fetcher Fear.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man, I know.
Unless you want to tell us who you want to be the next manager.
There you go.
What do you think?
I'll stay away from that. No positive comments there.
All right, we'll stay with the easy questions then. What quarterback will you be protecting on Sunday?
shoot, we'll see. But whoever's back there, we're excited about them. Marcus, Jaden, both incredible leaders, incredible players. So whoever it is, we protect them.
You know a little something about playing in front of great quarterbacks. What's it been like for you having a new quarterback and a kid that has, you know, he's in the MVP conversation, is Jaden Daniels. Just really came in, and you guys haven't looked back.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty special. I mean, he is as mature and professional of a rookie as I've seen. Just loves competing, loves football. So, yeah, it's been awesome. I've obviously been around one of the best, and it's early, but Jaden's looking pretty damn good so far.
Nick, it's been great to follow your career. Obviously, we know we mentioned your high school, then obviously in college, and you had the great stint with the Chiefs. How would you describe your evolution now to where you are on a part of a very good offensive line in Washington? You land there as a free agent. They clearly wanted you, and they paid you to come there. I thought the Bears should have shown more interest in you given their situation. What happened in free agency, and how happy are you to be where you are right now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, really happy where I'm at. I mean, DQ and AP have been awesome to work for. I mean, what they've done in the, 5-6 months that they've been here, been hired, is incredible. Enjoy playing for them. Yeah, free agency was interesting. You know, obviously loved Kansas City. You know, Chicago is always an option in the mind, but Washington was pretty clear that they wanted me and had an opportunity to come in and, you know, for the first time in my career, be a day one starter when we started the season. So got a chance to compete for that, won the job. So pretty happy out here.
It's Mully and Haw on The Score. We're talking to Nick Allegretti, the fine guard from the Washington Commanders. And obviously with the Bears coming out there, I'm sure you're watching all the tape and everything else. You probably follow the team anyway. What are your thoughts on the guys you're seeing on the Bears? What does their defensive line offer? And how do you break down your particular challenge this week?
Yeah, I mean, their defense is playing well. They play hard, physical. I think Billings, their nose guard on the inside, does not get the credit he deserves. Nose guards don't typically get a lot of credit, but it's playing some really good football. And then, obviously, Montez was out here in the past, so the guys know a lot about him, but incredible pass rusher. So, really, their defense is good. It's going to be a challenge. Pretty excited to get out there Sunday.
Nick, you know what a strong start means in Chicago if the Bears are off to one, and they are, but out in Washington, you guys are 5-2, and as every bit as big of a surprise, I think, to a lot of people. Maybe you're not, but what do you think is the biggest reason why you guys are off to the kind of start that you are?
Man, it's been impressive. I think that there is the guys that are in this locker room that were in the locker rooms prior. They're great guys. They have a lot of pain, a lot of hunger from the prior years, and you know they're playing their butt off because of that. And then the guys that they brought in, you know, a lot of guys getting their chance to, you know, solidify their name in the NFL. But really just a lot of high energy guys that love football, love competing. I mean, it's been, the locker room is, you know, a blast to be in. Great guys, the coaching staff, the management. It is a clear effort to turn around a franchise that had been through some struggles. So it's pretty cool to be out here.
That's great. You know, we think about Washington and we know, you know, the history of the organization, the Hogs and winning Super Bowls. Thinking back on like Joe Gibbs, that guy, whenever there was any kind of labor strife or any issue, that guy would wind up winning the Super Bowl, was a heck of a coach. And then you see the Dan Snyder ownership and everything that has happened. And now here are the Washington Commanders turning over a new leaf. You got a heck of a football team. And it's not often that both the Commanders and the Bears are good at the same time. So it's pretty fun that the game is flexed. Does that change the way that you prepare on a Sunday when you're playing in the later window? And I'm sure all your family, everybody here in Chicago will be able to see you. And people around the nation watch that game a lot.
Yeah, I mean, getting the game flexed is, I don't want to say it's something that we think about a lot, but, you know, when that happens, you know that there's an understanding that people want to watch us. They want to watch us, the Bears, what we're putting up on tape, on the field. So that's pretty exciting. And then, yeah, the the 4 o'clock slate is probably my favorite slate. You know, you get to sleep in a little bit more. It's not the night game, so you don't finish the game in your home at 1 a.m. So it's my favorite slate to play by far.
So, Nick, we heard Travis Kelce talk about you in glowing terms coming in, one of his favorite teammates ever. So just curious, do you keep in touch with him, and what is Taylor Swift really like?
Yeah, I mean, Travis is one of the best teammates I've ever had. Just as impressive of a career as he's had, probably the most selfless player that I've played with. Does not care about accolades. You know, could have went out there week 18 last year, caught a ball, hit 1,000 yards, and wasn't interested in doing it. You know, he is, even though he has the stats, he's so uninterested in that. He just wants to win. So, you know, learned a lot from him, Pat, all those guys over there, and doing my best to try to bring that mentality here.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Dang right. 815 texter, here we are. Saying as, what is, how did they phrase it? How did the 815 texter phrase it? Where is it? As something like, as, oh, here it is. 815. Steve, as your probably only Mexican-born listener, I would like to hear your thoughts about Fernando Valenzuela's passing. I don't think you're the only one, but I had some. I lived through it. I was in L.A. I saw it come, go, like was amazed by it. And by the way, this Fernando Valenzuela story, this history, this has a Bears reference. This has a Bears tie. It has a Bears element because everything does now. Okay. So Fernando Valenzuela, 63, passed away. In 1981, he made the Doyers the Doyers. They were just the Dodgers. He made them the Doyers. And here's the best way I can describe it. However you've read about or felt or seen, however big you think Magic and Kareem were, or Kobe and Shaq, Fernando was all of that and bigger. He was more. He was better. He was thunderous 43 years ago. And the thing is, it kind of happened by accident. Jerry Royce hurt himself late in spring training, and they say, all right, Fernando, you're starting. He played 10 games a year before. So Fernando goes out on opening day. He tosses a shutout in 4 of his first 5 starts. He would win his first 8 starts when wins mattered. 5 of them by shutout. He threw 7 complete games. Every pitching coach now just fainted. 7 complete games in 8 starts.
Can you imagine that happened now, huh?
It was the greatest start to a pitcher ever. And it made Fernando a superstar. It made him a superstar in a before Memorial Day when you're allowed to look at the standings or something like that. Fernando Mania had arrived. Fernando Valenzuela was all over television, newspapers, magazine. He was the biggest thing to hit baseball in ages. This is his rookie year. He started 8-0 with an ERA of 0.50. He was rookie of the year. He was Cy Young. Nobody before or after has done that. Nobody's pulled that daily double. He won a Silver Slugger Award back when pitchers hit. Same year. He was a World Series champion. Here we are, Dodgers-Yankees, 1981, Dodgers-Yankees. But see, here's the thing. It wasn't just, like this year we had Paul Skeens, right? You know, in 98 we had Kerry Wood, right? That way, there was more than just strikeouts to Fernando Valenzuela, him and his screwball. He was a Mexican star, born in Mexico, Echeverría. Born in Mexico, discovered by Mike Brito, who was scouting a guy on another team, and then all of a sudden Fernando's pitching, kid. So, what happened was, he became a star, a superstar. He became transcendent, Fernando Valenzuela did, in a city that was becoming predominantly Spanish-speaking.
at that time in 1980, late 70s, early 80s, and a franchise, the Doyer franchise, that rent asunder a Mexican community to build a ballpark in Chavez Ravine. You've heard that phrase, Dodger Stadium in beautiful Chavez. Well, it wasn't so beautiful for the Mexican community that was uprooted because the city threw them out so they could give the land to the Dodgers, and Walter O'Malley cut a great deal. Fernando Mania exploded in L.A. The Doyers were the number one team. That's it, period. Whatever you think the Bears are here, the Dodgers are there. The Dodgers. And Vinny had a lot to do with that just by being Vinny. But Fernando, when he exploded, the Mexican pride in the city showed out. He also continued the idea of Dodgers and the great pitching and the Koufax and the Drysdale and the Osteen and what Mike Marshall or whatever you got. And here's the thing about what, for all that we heard about the beginning, for all you remember, I just read you the stats of what Fernando did when he became Fernando. His greatest, certainly his gutsiest start came in October. In the 1981 World Series, it was the Yankees and the Dodgers. They met in 77, they met in 78, the Yankees won both. Dodgers and Yankees again, and the Yankees win the first two. Fernando starts Game 3, and he finishes Game 3. And the Dodgers win the next three. The Dodgers win the World Series when it was make or break with Fernando pitching. It wasn't exactly do or die. They weren't going to be eliminated, but you could see it from there. In that game, Fernando threw 147 pitches to win Game 3 in 1981, back when pitchers were pitchers. Saying 147 pitches in a game, half of this year's National League just scheduled Tommy John surgery. And by the way, the Yankees Game 2 starter and winner was Tommy John, Patrick Manley's father-in-law. If you're late to the show, I don't know where you've been. You're going to have to stay after class. Patrick Manley married Tommy John's daughter. Tommy John is his father-in-law. It's been talked about many times. Tommy John pitched in three games in the 1981 World Series. He started two of them. He has an ERA of 0.69. He struck out 11 and walked none. That might not be why you called, but that's why I'm talking about it. There's a Bears element to Fernando Mania, ladies and gentlemen. And Tommy John should be in the Hall of Fame. It's just shameful what Hall of Fame voters do. I don't know why they have ballots. But there's more to the Fernando story. In 1990, he was a member when Gibson hit the home run. This is sort of where we came in with the whole thing. Gibson, Freeman, what? Fernando had been injured that year. That's when Oral Hershiser had that magnificent year, and he set the record for consecutive scoreless innings. I think it was 58 and a third. I think that was Drysdale's record. And Oral Hershiser was approaching it, and I think Drysdale was a Dodgers announcer at that time. Maybe he come in 88 and come back from the White Sox. And he said, maybe I'll give up a run after I tie Drysdale. I don't want to go past him. He has such regard for Drysdale, who certainly Chicago fans, old-time Chicago baseball fans, know. And Drysdale said, if you try to give up a run, I'll come down to that dugout and I'll kick your ass back out there. Drysdale was having none of that. So Fernando was hurt. Hershiser was a star. Gibson was a star. He hit the miraculous home run. In 1990, Fernando threw a no-hitter against Los Cardinales, the team with which he would end his career. If you listen to the ninth inning of that game, and you should because Vin Scully is describing it, Vin Scully is saying no-hitter all the way through. He's time-stamping it. He's stuffing it up the backside of all you morons who think announcers can jinx such things. But that's not why he called. If you listen to Vinny talk about Fernando in that game, you'll hear him say something along the lines of, he's only thrown 107 pitches, so he has plenty left in the tank. Okay, modern baseball fans, I'm going to say that for you again. He's only thrown 107 pitches, so he has plenty left in the tank. You don't get to throw 107 pitches in two starts now. But that's what Fernando was doing, and he completed the no-hitter. Here we are, Yanks and Dodgers again. They honored Fernando Valenzuela. By the way, this World Series, the Dodgers have a special. We really need the I'm Fat podcast to weigh in on this. The Dodgers have a special World Series dessert. And by the way, at Dodger Stadium, you can buy a Doyer dog. You just think I'm, you know, making fun. The Doyers embrace the Doyer. I mean, this is all part of what they're doing. You can get a hot dog with queso and jalapenos and probably cilantro. It's called the Doyer dog. You can buy it at concession stands.
That sounds fantastic, honestly.
The Dodgers, the Doyers, have a new offering at for the World Series. A deep-fried peanut butter and Nutella sandwich made with Texas toast, peanut butter, hazelnut spread, bananas and strawberries dipped in funnel cake batter and deep fried.
I would eat that.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. So we have something else. I was talking.
Hey, Rosie, before you get into that, I actually have a caller here who's got a fun Pat Mattingly, Tommy John story, actually.
If you want to take him here. Yeah. Well, introduce us. Welcome me. Introduce me, Sean.
This is Jacob in Highland Park.
Jacob, thank you for calling the Score. Hello. Nobody else does.
Thank you. Well, can everyone hear me here?
Hello? You want to be on the radio?
David? Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, that's why I'm responding to you, Jacob.
Okay, all right. So here's just a little story real quick. So I listen to you guys all the time, but Patrick Mattingly's wife was my third grade teacher. And I remember one time, you know, he came in. We all went out to the field. And by the way, I'm 32, so this is a long time ago. Patrick came to the field at school and started snapping some balls, and which is really cool, and told us a really cool story, you know, about how he's related to Tommy John too. And I just, you know, I was listening to you guys and I thought that was, you know, kind of funny and awesome and just a really good memory that I had. And he was such an awesome guy that day, and hopefully he could hear this. And if his wife, Miss Manley, hears that as well, tell her to say hello.
All right. I'll pass it along. We'll do that. They may lead the pregame show tomorrow. It's a very famous pregame show. And Miss Manley, he said, Miss Manley, Jacob from Highland Park, says hi.
I'll see Pat tomorrow, so I'll make sure he knows about
it. Make sure. Yeah. Someone called along, in to Jacob. Say hi to Mrs. Manley, right?
I would think so, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all right. Jacob, I thank you for the call. I'm listening to that, and the way you were describing it, this was Chris Farley, like when he had Paul McCartney on, right? Saturday Night Live sketch. Paul McCartney, remember when you were with the Beatles? Had that sound, Jacob.
Patrick, that was awesome.
Yeah. Patrick Mattingly is a tremendous, first of all, he's a tremendous football analyst, but he's a better person. He's a great guy. He's wonderful. You know, mullets and El Caminos, and the man is unabashedly in favor of it. So anyways, Fernando passes. We did that. We did the anniversary of, well, Freddie Freeman did the anniversary of Kirk Gibson's home run. There was something else, because next hour is so jammed. We probably were not going to get to this. But I wanted, because I love this, the greatest sports story ever. This is, guess who turned 70 this week? Mike Ruzioni.
Snyder, buzz, long slap shot, saved by Mushkin. The U.S. team is depending a little bit too much now on Jim Craig. He's making too many good saves.
Berruzioni! Yes! Mike Berruzioni! Now we've got Bedlam. Oh, I love Brooks' reaction. Here it is again.
Here's Berruzioni using the defenseman as a screen. A good low shot. Just the kind of goal that Berruzioni scored about 2 weeks ago against the Soviets in Madison Square Garden. There's Pavukin going down to try to block the shot. It goes underneath.
The legend off gets checked by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Unbelievable.
We're talking about it. We've been talking about it all day because of what Freddie Freeman did and the calls. Joe Davis call, and it harkened back to Kirk Gibson and Jack Buck and Vin Scully, and we talked about those. Well, talk about legendary calls meeting the moment. Al Michaels, do you believe in miracles? But early on, you heard Mike Berruzioni turn 70 this week. The captain of the United States, 1980 United States Olympic hockey team, the Miracle on Ice team. 70. I mean, that goal is so fresh. But certainly Al Michaels' call is so fresh. That goal made it 4-3 U.S. 10 minutes exactly left in the third period. Snot-nosed U.S. college kids were holding a lead over the greatest hockey dynasty ever. Give or take a Montreal Canadiens dynasty. It just seems so fresh. And the line, do you believe in miracles? Seems so fresh. I've written so much about this, talked so much about this. I love that. It's the greatest sporting event ever. But for me, the moment that jumps out, the one that's still, I get a little choked up, I have to say. See, understand the gold medal hockey game is the last event played at the Winter Olympics. And right before the closing ceremonies. And so the medal stands in 1980 were just that. It was a stand. It held one person. Gold was the highest, silver off to the side, a little lower, bronze, lowest still, off to the other side. So it's medal presentation time. Americans come back and beat Finland. And the thing about beating Finland is they needed to do that. They were down at... The reason you didn't see the finish, the game against the Finns, is because it wasn't Disney-like. You didn't see that in Miracle because the U.S. is down after the first period, and Herb Brooks walked into the locker room and said, if you lose this game, you'll take this to your bleeping grave. To your bleeping grave. Not very Disney-like. Anyways, the U.S. came out. They took the heads off the Finns. And they win the game. They get the gold medal. And there is the flag goes up, the anthem, the gold medal around Ruzioni's neck. And his teammates are on the blue line on a carpet in front. And maybe you remember this, maybe you don't. It's one of the most joyous pictures ever. Certainly one of the most joyous videos. I love it. One of the greatest moments. That Berruzioni waves his teammates up to the medal stand. Everybody up there. 20 guys. All up there with Berruzioni. And you can see the fingers, the number one. They all got their gold medals. It's tremendous. And it was the greatest sporting event in history. And they remade that moment as best they could, the 2002 Olympics, in Salt Lake City, when the torch was given to Mike Berruzioni. He was to light the Olympic torch, and he was about to do it, when suddenly he turns to his side and starts waving the way he did in 1980. And here comes every member of the 1980 Olympic team, 22 years later, who could make it, everyone who was available to make it, and they all light the torch together the way they all celebrated on the medal stand in Lake Placid in 1980. I love that story. I love that moment. And I love Mark Schanowski, and he's going to talk Bulls. We're going to talk Bulls after this break. The Bulls have their home opener. We have stuff on Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.